So, okay, I've got to ask, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, why would you want to ship a full web application in Bash? Welcome back to Backend Banter, a show about backend engineering and careers. Today, I'm joined by Bad Cop or Bash Cop, I guess, same thing?
Yeah, you might find this hard to believe, but I'm actually not a cop at all.
Why is the name Bad Cop? Like, I know you stream a lot on Twitch about Bash, but like, that's... Bash Cop makes sense to me, but it's not actually Bash Cop on Twitch. It's Bad Cop. Why is that?
So it started as Bad Cop. That's just been like my online presence for a while. The Bash Cop thing is more of a recent thing. Pretty much anytime I go into somebody's Twitch chat now, it seems like whoever I'm talking to will get mixed up and like Freudian slip Bash Cop. So that's just... It become my second name, I guess.
So your interest in Bash, the scripting language, has nothing to do with the fact that your handle online has been Bad Cop.
Yeah, unrelated.
Unrelated, but a nice coincidence. Are you considering changing your handle at this point?
No. Well, so I've started using Bash Cop as like a... Like I have a YouTube channel for Bash that's... Bash Cop, but I'm gonna stick with Bad Cop as my main. You know, you gotta stick to what
you gotta make it a thing. Well, now yeah. You're like kind of halfway embracing it. This sounds dangerous.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, I hope it works out. So, okay, I'm super excited for this episode because we're gonna talk a lot about Bash and shells and terminals, which is something we have not spent very much time about on this podcast, which is unfortunate. It's super important. Start with Bash. So, like, what is Bash?
So, Bash is a Unix shell, which is, like, it's this type of program that's really useful for running other programs. And Unix has sort of this philosophy that you should have, like, a bunch of really small, well-made tools that do one specific thing, like, well. And the idea with Bash and other shell languages is that it makes it really easy to like compose these different tools in interesting ways to like solve problems. And yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So like when I open up a terminal, so I'm like, let's say I'm like new to development, right? And it's really easy for me to like kind of remember because I was really confused about CLIs and terminals when I first got into programming. I'm opening up a terminal and like I have this command prompt. And I think a lot of times as a new developer, you don't even realize like what language your shell supports, right? Like you might open the Windows command line. What is it called on? Is it just Windows command line? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's just called command line.
Yeah, just command line on Windows. Or like you might open the terminal on Mac OS. And like those are two very different environments, even though it's like an odd programmer. It kind of feels like you're in the same world. So in my experience, like if you're on a Mac that's older than like 3 years, it's like more than 3 years old, you're probably on Bash, right? The newer Macs, I think, ship with like ZSH by default. And then where else is Bash most commonly used? Is it on like Linux distros?
Yeah, it's pretty commonly the default shell on a lot of Linux distros. The like exact version varies a lot. And Bash has had some like pretty significant changes throughout the versions. Not like breaking changes, but like they've added new features that aren't backwards compatible.
So if you're on an old version of Bash, you'll run into problems if you have like a newer Bash script.
Yeah, so Mac still ships with, I believe, Bash 3, which is missing some like pretty big features like arrays and some other, I don't know, like a lot of syntax things.
For when you're doing more like programming scripting rather than just like executing executables.
Right. Which is, yeah, it's debatable how much scripting you should actually do in Bash. I would almost say that if you're reaching for arrays in Bash, it's probably time to switch to a different language.
Haven't you like famously shipped like full like HTMX web servers in Bash?
Oh yeah. Yeah, those definitely use arrays.
But is it because you're just doing it for fun? Are you going where no one else should go?
Well, okay. So it kind of like Bashstack kind of started as a meme. But then like I don't know, I came up with like a goal while I was writing it, cuz I was like I should do something more than just, you know, make a meme. And so my goal was, okay, we're going to prioritize the developer experience at the cost of literally everything else. That okay. means performance. That means portability. That means literally anything. But it's going to be really nice to use. And now I can't stop using it to ship things because it's just so convenient.
So this sounds like pure insanity to me, because I cannot imagine what feels like would be a worse developer experience than like trying to write complex web servers in Bash. What exactly are the things that make the developer experience so good?
I don't know. You have access to all of these I don't even know how to explain.
Are you talking about like the command line tools like sed, awk, grep? Like, are you using that stuff in your
fan favorites? So the Bash stack actually has it's an acronym. It was originally inspired when Primogen was doing the Chad stack. He made it was like an anagram of like COBOL, Haskell, Alpine, Docker or something. I don't remember. Okay. And I was like, okay, what would Bash stand for? Well, obviously the B is Bash, and then the A can be awk, and the S can be sed, and the H can be HTMX. And that's great.
Okay. I think I get it. Now, sed, for people who don't know, what are sed and awk?
Well, sed is stream editor. it's the stream version of ed, which is the standard editor. Not many people use ed anymore, I would say, but
I didn't even know there was
still
an ed, to be honest.
Oh yeah,
this is news to me. Yeah,
ed is an editor back from when, like, okay, so you were bringing up terminals earlier. What you're calling a terminal is actually a terminal emulator.
Apologies.
So back in the day, a terminal used to be, you had a keyboard, you'd type mm-hmm. stuff in, and then you basically had a printer that would print out the lines of text that were returned by the program.
Okay.
So things like Vim didn't exist back then, because obviously you didn't want like every keystroke to print out the entire program, because that would take a really long time. So people would use programs like ed, the standard editor, to make edits to their program. So ed is like, it literally just waits for input, and you have to be like, all right, on line 21, make an edit to column 7 to insert these characters. And so like the way you would do it is you would have a printout copy of your code, and you would like figure out what edits you wanted to make, and then you would run the commands in ed to make those changes.
This is crazy. This yeah. sounds like complete, I mean, this sounds insane to me. I can only imagine how it sounds to someone who's like just starting programming, you know, a decade after I did.
Yeah, it's a lot more convenient now when we have screens.
Screens are nice. Okay. So we use terminal emulators. And what's the difference between, because I feel like this is also a sticking point for a lot of new developers. I certainly didn't even understand this for several years after I got into coding. What's the difference between a shell and a terminal or terminal emulator?
Yeah, so the terminal emulator is like the program that runs on your computer that like puts the letters on the screen, right? Like that's its job. It's doing the rendering. It's parsing like your literal keyboard inputs. And then it's sending all of that as instructions to some program running within it. So you can actually, you can run like any program in your terminal as long as it, you know, accepts input and prints output to standard out. But like shells are a particular kind of program that like bash that run, they have this like it's called like a read eval print loop where you're basically waiting for some input from the user, and then when they hit enter you do the thing and then you print out what happened,
and then you do that over and over and over again, right?
That's pretty much what a shell is. They've grown a little bit in complexity to involve like a full scripting language now. But that's like, I consider that more of like the secondary use of a shell.
Yeah.
Is the scripting aspect.
Okay. So like the most basic kind of a shell could just be like a couple commands. In fact, on Boot Dev, there is a project, a guided project that we do. It's like build a Pokedex command line shell, and it like it gives you just like three commands. It's like you can like look at the world, like where you are, you can like look at the Pokemon that are in the area of the world that you're in, and you can like throw a Pokeball, and that's it. You can't do anything else, but it's technically a shell, because you like type the command you want to do, you hit enter, and then like you just see the results. Like it'll tell you maybe what area of the world you're in, and then you get to take another command, right? I think a lot of the early like text-based video games kind of worked as shells, right?
Yeah, basically. Bash is really not any different. It's an implementation of a standard called the POSIX shell standard. And there's like a few different shells that all implement like the same set of basic rules for what a shell in Unix should be.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, you can make your shell whatever you want. Like literally any program that takes input and then runs the commands.
So when we see things like at the top of a script, you see like slash bin slash sh, the shebang, right? That's like, okay, this is Unix POSIX, or this is POSIX shell, right? And then bash is like a superset of POSIX shell. And I'm guessing ZSH is like an alternative superset of POSIX shell.
Yeah. They're all implementations of the same like standard. Interestingly, if you're running, so bin sh is the born shell.
Oh, okay.
And then bash is the born again shell. same guy.
Okay, I get it. So wait, so sh isn't even, well, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I just don't even know, but like, so is born shell, or just sh, is that like the POSIX standard, or is it just like one implementation of it?
It's like a very minimal implementation of it.
Okay.
It doesn't have a lot of extra features on top like bash and ZSH do. It just sticks to the standard pretty much.
Right. Okay, so we've got this like REPL, this shell where we can type commands, they do a thing, we get output, we can do it again. That makes sense to me. Python does this, right? Like when you just like run Python in the command line, if you don't provide like a file input, it will just give you a little REPL. You can start writing Python code and it will interpret it one line at a time. But Python to me feels more like just a general purpose programming language, and you really only use it in a REPL context like, frankly, I don't ever, but I've definitely interacted with some people that do, if they have like just a 4 or 5 line program they want to run. But it's like really hard in the Python shell to run like executable files on your machine. There's like a lot of extra work that you have to do. Whereas in like Bash, you just like type the name of the executable. Is there like a fundamental philosophical difference? Because I feel like if you really zoom out, it feels the same. Like Bash is essentially a full programming language that also is a shell. And you could argue Python's the same thing.
Yeah. Python, first of all, Python is my favorite like command line calculator. If I need to do some math real quick, you just run Python and then you can type in your math. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Python's more of a like batteries included, like full programming language where you have lots of standard libraries that do a bunch of cool things. And Bash is more of a like, Bash is really kind of a glue language. I find it most useful when I want to do something between two different programming languages. Like, I don't know, I need to have a script in my project that copies some JSON file over from this folder to this folder. Like Bash is probably what I'm going to write that in. I'm probably not going to write a script in Python because it just like to copy a bunch of files, the syntax for it is like, it just feels overcomplicated. It's like I have to import OS and then I have to, you know, recursively go through the list of files, and maybe there's a util for that, but in Bash it's literally like you just do cp,
yeah, and cp dash r whatever. Yeah. Recursive. Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
like one line.
And that's because in Bash you're mostly just composing other like already written programs, right? Either other like, yep, Bash scripts or maybe even Python executables or just like C executables or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me. So, okay, I've got to ask. So, like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, why would you want to ship a full web application in Bash?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the biggest benefit of writing it in Bash that I've experienced is, like, it really is just productive for some reason. I don't know if it's because I'm just weirdly into Bash or why, but like I've done like a number of streams where I'll bring on a guest who maybe doesn't even really know Bash, and we just pair on like making some application, and every single time we have shipped something at the end of the stream. Like
I don't even know like what does it even look like from a high level? Like, I kind of know what a Go web server looks like, or a Python server, or a Node server. Like, I don't even know where I would start with a Bash web server.
Well, luckily we have a handy little like wrapper script, you know, like create React app. We, yeah, have create Bash stack app.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah. So the domain is Bash stack with Bash. Hold on. Bash stat. I don't know. How do I send you something in here?
There's a little chat bubble at the bottom right.
Yeah, here. I have a great domain.
It's so for listeners, it's B-A-S-H, Bash, S-T-A, like the beginning of stack, and then .cc, so Bash stack.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, the general idea is it's kind of structured like, I used this as an excuse to learn what the heck Next.js was, because previously I had no idea. Mm. So I was like, people seem to really like this Next.js thing. How can I corrupt it? And so I pretty much stole like their design choices for like routing and stuff.
Okay. Like file-based routing.
Next.js has this file-based router where you have like your variables are in square brackets in the file name. So I just literally implemented their router by reading their docs in Bash. And okay. I kind of hate it. because I don't know if you like file-based routing, but I don't really like file-based routing.
I'm actually not a fan. Yeah, that's it's yeah, to me it's and I actually want to hear your take on it, but let's hear your take on it first. Why don't you like file-based routing?
Well, this is probably a skill issue, but like when I'm using my editor, I'll see that, okay, I'm in a file called square brackets user ID .sh, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. Like, I have six different square bracket user ID files. Which one is this?
Yeah. So we just migrated Boot Dev's backend to Nuxt. So it's the Next.js of the Vue world. Very, very similar. And it also has file-based routing. And yeah, the files, so there's like a pages directory, and in there, it doesn't bother me too much when you basically like are just forced to name the kind of entry point for that path handler, the name of the page. So like, for example, we have a slash community page. And so there's just a community.vue in there. Like that works mostly fine. But yeah, when you have dynamic variables, there's square brackets for the dynamic variables. So you do like open square bracket, I don't know, user handle, close square bracket, .vue. And that's just looks terrible to me. It doesn't look like a code file. And there's also like when it's an optional path parameter, at least in Nuxt, it's double square brackets. And I'm like, oh God. And so like, if you don't know Nuxt, this just looks asinine in my opinion.
Yeah. And I also don't like that to like refactor my routes. I have to do like a bunch of file system manipulation.
Yeah.
Which is never that fun compared to just like modifying a file. I don't know.
Yeah, well, the git diff is not, so like if you have a file that specifies all the routes, right? If you change a route, there's just like a one line file change in the git diff. But if you have to rename a file, the diff is just crazy. It's just the full file change, right? Okay, so yeah, we kind of agree that we have some agreements there. Okay, I'm looking through Bash Stack docs. So it looks to me like, well, here's my question. Is the actual server written in Bash, or are you offloading that? It looks like TCP server.
Yeah, so we go down as far as the TCP implementation. Bash doesn't have a great TCP implementation until, I want to say 5.2. There's another project that implements an HTTP server like fully in Bash, and they ran into this issue where, like, if you want to listen multiple times on the same port, which is important for a HTTP server to do, Bash is kind of limited. So they actually made a patch for Bash and got it merged to like make their thing better, but like, nobody uses Bash 5.2. Nobody is that far in the future. Like, you're lucky if you have 4.
Yeah. I imagine like people don't want to break their shells, so they're really careful about upgrades.
I think most people just don't think about it. Like, they just use whatever came with the machine and they're happy.
Well, most people probably aren't pushing the limits of what you're able to do in Bash.
That's fair.
Okay, so you go down as far as the TCP layer. It lists Node as a dependency, but you're not actually running like a Node server. That's just so you can like compile Tailwind, it looks like.
Yeah, if you want Tailwind support, we do have it, but you do need to use Node currently. They have like a standalone CLI thing, but it's pretty much the same as just running Node anyways, because it's like Vercel's package thing, which bundles the Node project as one big binary.
Okay, yeah. By the way, the quick start on Bash Stack looks to me to be much more elegant than create next app or whatever it's called. You're curling a script and piping it into Bash.
Yeah, I figured it had to go into Bash because that's like, it's just fitting.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Okay.
It really validates right off the bat that you definitely have Bash installed. Which is important if you're going to be using Bash Stack.
So when you write a typical like handler, which I guess like because you're building websites, particularly like with HTMX, you're mostly rendering HTML, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're rendering HTML, what are like the most common tools? Is it really sed and awk?
Yeah. Currently, yes. The patterns are still being established here. So one of the big things that comes up a lot when you're like templating HTML is like, okay, I want to like iterate over this list of things. And Bash has a really nice thing for that, which is just pipes. Like pipes are designed to iterate over a list of things.
Right.
So you take your list of things and then you pipe it into something that transforms it into like a list of HTML. And what I've been using for this is mostly awk, but it's not the most readable thing. So there's definitely room for improvement there.
So I want to pause for just a second. We talked about how sed is stream editor, right? And when we did a little history on ed. So stream sed is like you're able to edit text as it is piped through sed, if I'm understanding correctly. And that usually means like line by line.
Yeah, sed typically runs line by line. You can do other things. There's like some magic you can give to sed and then it'll read the whole file and then operate it on it in one pass. Mm. But that's not recommended generally. Okay. It's kind of, yeah.
So you
it's a bit of an anti-pattern. Like,
yeah, okay. So when you're saying you like pipe stuff into sed, that's because it kind of naturally does things like iterates line by line. And then what is awk?
So awk is weird. It's not like short for anything. It's literally just like the names of the authors. So it's just like three last names. I forget who wrote that. But it's basically just a full another programming language. I don't really know what it is other than that.
So it just like it's... let's see if we can find like a more formal definition of it. Awk. So I'm Googling it really quick.
Wikipedia says it's a domain specific language designed for text processing.
How does it interact with, because like in my mind, it's like, okay, sed is stream edit. So I can like iterate over something and edit it. Why do I also need awk? What are the kinds of things you would do with awk that you couldn't just do with sed or maybe couldn't do easily?
So I've been doing a lot of advent of code in Bash. And we've used awk a little bit. Like technically you could use awk to like solve the entire problem. And some people have been doing that. But things that I have used it for are more like some of the problems like give you a grid of text and you have to do things on that grid. Okay. And like I said before, Bash is really convenient when you want to work through like a list of things line by line.
Hmm.
But when you get to grids, it's more annoying because then you need to go horizontally too.
Yeah. And you might need to go backwards or something.
I wrote a little helper in awk that will take a grid as an input and transpose it by like rotating it 90 degrees.
Okay.
And so I've been abusing that a lot for advent of code solutions.
Is it just like an awk one liner or something that you just like?
It's a multiple liner, but okay. Yeah, so Bash has functions. I just wrap it up in a little function called transpose and call it a day.
Got it. Okay. But it sounds like for doing the thing that you typically do with a web server, which is like request comes in, maybe hit a database, then like render HTML from whatever state you have that you loaded from the database. That's probably mostly just line by line. So is this mostly a sed problem?
Well, so, okay. The thing about Bash that makes it maybe not great as a choice for a web server is that anytime you invoke something like sed or awk, what you're doing is you're spawning another process. You're spawning a child process of Bash that's doing some stuff and then terminating.
I was told we don't care about performance here.
We care a little bit about performance. because turns out spinning up like, you know, 50 processes per request is actually pretty slow.
Sounds pretty slow.
So there's when you want to do, when you want to write high performance bash, you need to keep in mind how many times you're forking, and you want to try and minimize that. So
never heard that term before, by the way. This is, you're coining a phrase on this podcast.
Forking?
High
performance bash. Okay. Yeah. It's not a commonly used term for probably good reasons, but yeah, so you want to try and use as many of the built-in features in bash as you can. So you can read line by line in bash without starting up another process. So okay. I try to do that as much as possible.
So that's interesting though, because that kind of, at least in my head, maybe I probably just misinterpreted you, but like you said that like the developer experience is so good, and my head went to, oh, that's because you can like very easily fork a process and use one of these like pre-built tools. Is it actually something else that makes it like ergonomic or good developer experience?
So you can definitely do that in like your application logic. I was talking more about like the bash stack core is more of a high performance area. The actual like parsing the HTTP request into like, you know, the headers and the body and URL params and all that stuff. I try to do as little forking as possible.
Got it. Okay, so the bash that is like the tooling for the bash stack is high performance bash. And what you write as an application level developer, you can be a little more fast and loose with.
Yeah, you can do what you want.
Okay, I understand. Because again, we don't care about performance at that level.
Right. So like an interesting use case. One of the first like pair programming streams I did was with Tech Savvy Travi. And
love Travis, yeah.
We decided to build a CDN. And we cheated a little bit. What we did is that GitHub has a CDN, and if you put things on GitHub, you can just get a CDN link by nature of like GitHub puts everything on their CDN.
Yeah, you just upload it and like you get a CDN link, right?
So initially, Travis was worried that like we were going to have this problem where we needed to talk to the GitHub API and all this stuff. And I was like, no, 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 no. Literally in our endpoint application handler, we can use the get CLI. We just do get commands in like, so literally when you upload a file, we take the file, we add it to the repo, we commit it, we push, and that is the full.
You don't need SDKs. You just need CLI tools. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Also, this really smells of Travis to me. In like, we're going to build a CDN and then we just fully cheat by using the GitHub CDN. it smells very crabbling to me. Okay, cool. So I'm so curious. Walk me through what like an actual handler looks like written in bash. How are you connecting to the database, and how are you like rendering that into HTML?
Yeah. So interesting you bring up this topic of the database. What I recommend, now bash stack is database agnostic. You can use whatever you want. But what I strongly recommend is that you create a folder called data and you put the data in there.
Okay.
So
who needs a fancy database? We're just using the file system. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the database is doing anyways. Like, cut out the middleman. Yeah.
It's true. This is high performance bash. We're cutting out unnecessary components. Okay, so you've got a data directory in your bash stack application. Of course, like I'm gonna recommend that you gitignore it, right?
Yeah, that's ideal. Actually, I think the default gitignore for bash stack includes the data folder as ignored.
Okay, that's very forward thinking of you guys. So Got your data directory. Are you shoving everything in? What's your preferred method? How do you actually go about storing data in your data directory?
I would say it depends on the application. Generally, you know, if you want like a key value thing, you use the file name as the key, and then the contents of the file as the value. That's pretty good. It's got fast lookup.
Yeah. Okay. Order one lookups. I like that.
Yeah. If you need like a lot of key value things, then you can like, you can do it in a file where you have like the first column is the key. And then you can like grep for lines that start with a certain key. That's a good way to do it.
Key value is easy. Do you try to just like stay within the key value paradigm, or have you had to do any like complex searching?
Let me think what the most complex thing we've done. I'm not sure.
So we have, if we're not concerned with performance, like, you know, just brute force look through the whole thing, right?
True. Generally I don't have to go that bad. I don't know. I think that probably the craziest thing that I've implemented using the data folder paradigm is the, like, I have OAuth sign in on like a number of bash tech apps. Like using
like
using third party providers. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's probably like a little bit, I don't know, maybe ethically questionable.
Wait, hold on. Why is it ethically questionable?
I think Bashstack has not been maybe tested so well in the arena of like security.
It doesn't have battle hardened security
purpose. Right. We're still working on that you know, that certification.
Okay. All right, so security is a little dicey.
I try to minimize what scopes I request whenever I do anything with OAuth. Just as few scopes as possible.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, like, I'm not an expert on how Bash does literally anything. But I mean, as long as you're on a private server and you're just saving to, like, you know, saving to a location on disk that is also not being served itself as a file, like, probably doing okay.
I've come up with like an entirely new class of vulnerabilities, I think. It's not, as far as I know, I haven't found any like arbitrary, like you can inject shell commands.
We don't have little Bobby tables, little Bobby
shells. I'm sure they exist. But I have written, at least a few times, I've written code that's what I call sed injectable, where you can just run arbitrary sed commands if you put the right input in, which is pretty terrifying.
Yeah, I could see how that would be a problem, especially depending on what you're inputting into sed in the first place, for like reading your whole database into it or something. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk motivation for a second. I was talking to you about your background, and it looks like, you know, you kind of got to start working with AWS, and then you did a bunch of embedded work, and then you did like mobile app development, and then even SRE or site reliability engineering. To some people that aren't familiar with that term, it's, my understanding, it's kind of like a DevOpsy, cloud engineering sort of thing, where you're really concerned with like keeping sites alive and like up and running. So like, this background to me does not scream, I'm going to invent Bashstack and stream about it on Twitch. How did we get here?
Yeah. I think the simplest, like most honest answer, like looking at my career trajectory, is that like, I just get bored really easily. And, and whenever that happens, I'm just like, time to do something completely different. That's honestly the only explanation I have for how,
I mean,
this
it's reasonable.
Came to be.
It's certainly reasonable. Like, it's crazy. Like I said, those things are not like super related, like embedded AWS
no,
mobile.
They're really not.
And it, on one hand, some people might look at that and say, you haven't taken the time to specialize, right? You've fractured your career and you haven't specialized in anything, and that's going to hurt your career. Some people might say that. I actually think it's great, generally speaking. I think way too few developers go as broad as they can. And I do think it's fine to specialize eventually, but I actually think that especially with like developers in like the first 5 years of their careers, I think a lot of us don't go wide enough, at least at the beginning, because having that breadth of knowledge, like seeing how things are done and embedded and mobile and on the cloud, I feel like it just gives you a ton of perspective. Like, how do you feel it's impacted your career?
Yeah, I think it does help, particularly when you're like, when you're trying to solve a hard problem that requires like a wide understanding, then it's suddenly a very useful skill to have like all of this breadth of knowledge. I would say it's probably pretty niche. Like, I don't think everyone should try and, you know, avoid specialization, but I don't know. I found it to be good for me.
Yeah. Do you think it's helped or hurt like your ability to get jobs now?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure.
I can give you my perspective, or my guess, I guess is what I would say.
Sure.
My guess is that, so I've worked as a hiring manager at like smaller companies. And to me, this is fantastic for smaller companies. It's like, this person has done a bunch of different things and we have problems that aren't like crazy specific. Like, you don't need to understand the Go compiler to build the back end for boot dev, right? Like, we're just trying to ship effective like web apps or whatever. And so having someone that has breadth of knowledge that can see a problem and be like, okay, I'm pretty familiar with some good patterns to solve this problem is super useful. The only place I imagine where it wouldn't be quite as good is if somebody needs like some crazy amount of specialization, like we're trying to like really tweak something at the hardware level. And so we want someone with 10 years of embedded experience versus 3 or whatever. That's kind of my perception. Have you mostly worked at larger companies, smaller companies? Have you seen a difference there?
I've worked at both, more recently smaller companies, and I think that's where I want to stick to. I don't know, larger companies, like, I feel like too much of my job ends up being things that I don't really care about. It's like I don't want to have to fight for all of these process changes that probably should happen. I just want to work somewhere where they already like have good processes.
Yeah. Or if you go small enough, there are no processes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's fine too. Like, I don't want to have to fight against a bunch of overhead stuff. I find that really annoying.
The bureaucracy that want to stop you from shipping literally everything in Bash.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, just let me make my mistakes.
I love that so much. Okay, so AWS embedded mobile. So let's just say cloud embedded mobile. Which one did you like the most?
I feel like embedded stuff is where I ran into the most like wild problems that I never expected to face. And that wasn't necessarily so much because it's like super difficult or anything. It was more just like I worked with a team of people with crazy different backgrounds, and we were all trying to write C++ in very different ways. And it just came in, it came together in such a beautiful disaster. you have one developer that's like got a Java background, so you know, you'll have a class that's just like a bunch of getters and setters. And then you have another developer who has a C background, so they're calling like malloc and free over here. And then you have me and someone else who are like both C++ developers, and we're writing actual C++. And
we're doing it the right way.
Unfortunately, C++ lets you do all of these things, but it's not a great idea to do them all in the same project.
Yeah.
Because you get so many weird bugs. If you call new to like create some memory and then you call free, that's super bad. That's not good.
It's new and delete, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. Malloc and free.
Malloc and free go together. You don't want to be mixing and matching.
It's just like for the sake of our listeners, new and delete is for like classes and objects, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's effectively the same. It's like, it's just allocating a block of memory.
Oh, okay. And so it doesn't really care if it's a class, an object, or any other type of data.
I think the issue is that if you have constructors, and I don't remember C++ that much at this point.
The constructors and the destructors, yeah.
They don't get called if you do malloc and free,
right?
I think
that's why in my head I was thinking classes, because it's like, okay, I would use new and delete because I would have a constructor and a destructor, and by calling delete, it would call the destructor, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas if you're doing just like, yeah, C stuff, malloc and free. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, it sounds like a disaster.
it was really fun. We had so many cool bugs.
I'm glad to see you're so positive on the whole experience. So that was your favorite. What did you, again, cloud, mobile, embedded, which was your least favorite to work with?
Ooh. I don't know. The cloud is such a mess. It's
oh yeah,
like the AWS dashboard is one of the craziest, like, incomprehensible designs of all time, and it's just like I don't understand how it still hasn't gotten that much better. Like,
there is not they're optimizing for, like, it feels like they're optimizing for like low cost and backwards compatibility and user it's the opposite of the bash stack, to be honest. They're not optimizing for developer experience nearly enough.
Everything but developer experience.
Yeah. Because the assumption is, like, if you're using AWS at scale, like, you'll just hire people that, like, can spend literally all day trying to figure out how to use this web app.
It's because they know there's no good alternative, and so, like, you're stuck.
Yeah, I mean, so we actually use GCP at Boot Dev, and
it's not that much better.
No, it is not, and I am increasingly worried. Let me just put it this way. Google, if you're listening, I really hope you don't kill GCP as a product. Like,
oh, no.
Like, that would be a disaster, but They just sold Google Domains. I don't know if you saw this news, right?
They sold
Google Domains to Squarespace.
I was a customer.
I am a customer. And it just is like, wait, hold on. You're trying to compete with AWS and you sold your domain provider? Like, my domains for my GCP projects are now like on squarespace.bullshit. Like, I don't know. I don't want to deal with Squarespace. I don't do anything with Squarespace. But it to me, it was just like, holy crap. Like, if you wanted to invest in GCP, I feel like they just made the biggest mistake in selling Google Domains.
Now, have you used Azure at all?
Oh, I have signed into Azure, and I was immediately scared because it started asking me about Active Directory. And so then I signed out of Azure, and I never signed in again.
That's probably smart, yeah. I wish I had done that.
Yeah, so like, here we are. Like, the cloud is, I mean, I love deploying on the cloud. Like, I've deployed weird, like, on-prem stuff. Like, cloud's great. It's super easy comparatively. But I am a little worried about the state of things. So, okay. I guess I should circle back on the question. So, it sounds like the cloud was your least favorite role.
Yeah, I think I would, yeah.
Okay. I've never worked as a like cloud engineer. I've always worked as like a backend developer that happens to do a bunch of cloud stuff. But I could see how if like I wasn't writing code every day, if all I was doing was like SRE or cloud engineering work, I do not think I would enjoy it very much. And I think I would prefer almost any type of development, although mobile, I don't know, man. Like mobile might be the bottom of the barrel for me. Anytime I've opened Android Studio, I've wanted to kill myself.
Yeah, Android Studio and Xcode they're competing for worst developer experience of all time. For sure.
They're coming for the AWS dashboard.
They might already have it beat. But I was fortunate enough to work in React Native, which is it's a step up from just the raw native Android and iOS.
You can forget about the native stuff for the most part, and then when you have to go down into it,
so I spent a lot of time, because we were using React Native, doing performance work, and it was not my favorite thing either. It's really difficult to profile JavaScript on like a mobile device without changing the performance characteristics of said JavaScript, doing the profiling. There's not a lot of great tooling for it, for like doing actual physical devices. Well, there might be now. I don't know. It's been a while. But this was like a super annoying problem, because we would run it in the browser, and we'd be like, okay, it has like these performance characteristics, but the browser runs V8, which is totally different than what we were running on the devices. So like we'd fix something and we'd be like, okay, that didn't actually matter at all.
Right. This is like, it's kind of like that principle in physics, is the Heisenberg like observability principle. Like as soon as you observe something, it just like behaves differently.
Yeah.
But to the extreme. Because usually it's not too bad. I worked on React Native at one of my jobs, and the biggest frustrations for me were that A, like you still had to compile the damn thing in order to like ship it to a QA environment, and that took like an hour, which is something I'm not used to. Mostly writing Go on the web, it's like I build in 2 seconds and then I push it up. That was the worst. That was the worst of it for me.
I've got one more horrifying.
Oh, absolutely! Tell me something horrifying.
So we were using Go for our mobile app that was in React Native, using a little project called Gopher.js to transpile the Go to JavaScript and then put that on the device.
What?
Gopher.js?
I'm just googling. Why? Why would you?
Why would you do that? So the whole meme is that we wanted to support like offline behavior in our mobile app, where it would like mimic what the server would do. So we just compiled our server to JavaScript and put it on your phone. And lo and behold, lots of performance issues when you use the mobile app offline. I just don't understand why, you know? It's so crazy. How could this happen?
What a goddamn mystery. So you took your back end and you just shipped it to the front end, not even in WebAssembly, just in JavaScript.
Well, so we did try WebAssembly, but the problem was when we bundled it as WebAssembly instead of JavaScript, it suddenly got a whole lot bigger.
Oh no.
Because Go binaries are not very small.
True.
And JavaScript is pretty small comparatively. Like you're just measuring bytes.
Right, because you're not like JavaScript has the built-in garbage collection.
Yeah, you can,
like, when you compile,
you can use all the nice JavaScript features that are already as binary in the JavaScript runtime.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. It's like JavaScript's cheating though, because like all of that stuff is just built into the thick client, as Carson would say.
Yeah. So JavaScript. Unfortunately, single-threaded language And so when you're in a React Native context, like normally on mobile, you can do more than one thread. You can have like your UI thread and then another thread. But in React Native, you're kind of locked in. And there were some like old deprecated projects to, you know, bring in another JavaScript thread or do whatever. But the thing that we ended up doing that was like common practice at the time is you take a web view, you make it 0x0 pixels, and you put it in the corner, and then you just run your JavaScript there.
It's a web, you just hacked a web worker, right?
Yeah. And so you're sending like post messages back and forth between this web view and your mobile app, and it's sometimes it works.
That's hilarious. So for anyone listening, it's web workers, right? I'm not making up the term web worker API. It's like in a in a browser, there's this new API, newish, where you can like spawn a new JavaScript thread to like do stuff in the background, and you like post messages back and forth. So like the browser has its own like main execution thread for JavaScript, like the window, and a web worker is like this background thread that you can kind of interact with, and you can spawn many of them if you want. What's happening here is like you're just actually creating more windows and using them as web workers, is my understanding, because you don't have a web worker API.
Yeah. You just kind of put that second window off screen somewhere where the user can't see it.
It's 0x0 pixels, and it's at location -1000. Oh, man. Honestly, your career just sounds like a blast. It sounds like you've had a good time. What is the future for Bash Stack?
The future for Bash Stack? That's a good question. I've been contemplating this a little bit. I think I'm pretty happy with the state that it's in. I'm trying to think of like what features would like qualify it for like a 1.0 release. Like what would that look like?
Yeah.
But how do beyond
we,
that,
are you seriously pondering the question of how do we get this going in production?
Oh, it already run like, so I don't know if you know like fly.io.
Oh no. Yes, I do.
Yeah, it just works like out of the box with Fly. You can just do like Fly deploy or whatever, and a Bash Stack app will just work.
So I guess I should rephrase my question. I don't doubt that it works in production. Is your goal to get like companies using it in production that are like actually making money?
No. Well, so I've said from day one that like the second like a serious like company starts using it, I'm just gonna archive the whole like repo.
But the sponsorship dollars will start flooding in at that point.
Well, that's how you get them to sponsor you, right? You archive it and you're like, you know, this is no longer.
Oh, I see. So that is the play.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, I guess we'll see. That's right. I guess game theory says you can't just tell them that you're going to unarchive it. Okay. I see what's going on. Okay. Everyone, stay tuned to Bash Stack. I hope our little explanation about shells and terminals and REPLs and bash and POSIX, I hope that was illuminating to some people. I think it will be. It certainly would have been awesome for me to hear that, I think, earlier on in my career. Thank you so much for coming on. Bad Cop on Twitter, Bash Cop on YouTube. Is there anywhere else you'd like people to find you?
Bad Cop _ on Twitch. Bad Cop is my main platform.
Awesome. We'll drop links in the show notes and the description below. Thanks again. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.